gentlemen, honorable members, I understand our technology is not working today. That's bad. That's really very bad. Lolly, nothing that you...
They were here.
They said it's not. And then I don't mind us moving to
TNOP. That is nothing.
Which NTOP? I think. Because we must record what
we
are going to say.
What's
TNOP? TNOP is here. Yes, TMG.
How is the technology? You really mean? Really, I know I'm out of luck. But
my memory was the whole
come
okay?
On.
My memory was
your memory is there.
Yes. CCMA, I'm not sure whether you have already had tea. I saw tea outside.
Thanks, Chair. I think that we've got it in.
Okay. Honorable members, good morning and welcome to the meeting. Welcome CCMA. I am Priscilla Temba. I'm the chairperson of the Select Committee on Labor and Public Enterprises. Members will introduce themselves so that you know when we interact, you know who you're speaking to. Honorable Firstman, can you start? It's not working. Don't put it on.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. My name is Dr.
And I need
okay.
Honorable.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I am for Alain Dana from
SNK. I'm a member of.
Good morning. My name is Aminal Badia. I'm from the West.
I don't know why did they do this.
Yeah.
Because now you can't see that member. Honorable Sibande. he's from Mpumalanga. He's representing Mpumalanga. We've got other member who has gone out. We've got other members in other committees. As you know that in the NCOP, I don't know whether you are aware, we are few members and we are stretched to other committees. But members will join us as they, you know, finish with their other meetings. I'm not sure, members, what do you suggest? Can we check if we can have a good move to a venue that has got a... Can I really appeal with you members? Because we must record, even if it's the year end, but we want to record so that when we come back, when we say CCMA, you said this, we must you know, see it in black and white. So they are checking.
Why? How did we end up here?
No, the staff will explain. I can't. Lolly, don't go.
You know, I could phone our local Western Cape office because obviously we have arbitration and we have recording systems there. I think that could bring us one of our recordings. If you find somewhere else, I'm sure we could operate.
No, I think there can be a room that is available that we can go to. So, honorable member is out of order. He's asking me. I'm not doing logistics.
Let me just find
out. The meeting was transferred to another venue in the NCOP building.
That's okay. We really apologize for that. I think we can start presenting whilst they are still coming to connect. We've got the hard copies, but it's going to record. Naveen, can you introduce yourself and everyone here? Yeah, everybody will introduce himself or herself.
Morning, Chair. Thank you very much. Just by way of clarity, I'm Noreen Khan, and I'm the director of the CCMA, which, just for clarity for those who don't know, means that I'm the accounting officer and the chief executive. Just by way of clarity as well, and just to explain to other committee members, and I'm aware that the chairperson is actually aware of this, is that we're here together with the executive management committee of the CCMA, and not the members of the governing body, who are the accounting authority of the CCMA, by discussion and by arrangement, because they are all involved in MEDLAC today in a long advanced pre-scheduled meeting, and we thank you very much for that indulgence. What I think I will do is I will just go around the room quickly and introduce you to everybody and tell you the capacity that they appear before the committee in, just so everybody's clear, as the committee has already introduced themselves to us, and we thank you for that. On my immediate left is Nelson Govender, who is the General Manager for Operations. And I'm just going to move across the table. Across the table from Nelson is Jeremy Gaffney. He is the National Senior Commissioner for Capacity Building and Outreach. Next to him, Ntombi Boikotsel, the Chief Financial Officer of the CCMA. Next to her is Asil Subala, the National Senior Commissioner for Mediation. And next to him is Hilton Dow, who is the Manager for Dispute Management and Prevention of the CCMA. And I'm moving into the back row, starting on the far on my far left, a gentleman in the white shirt, National Senior Commissioner for Operations, Ronald Bernico. Next to him, the Corporate Services Manager of the CCMA, Itumeleng Maseke. Next to him, our outgoing Chief Financial Officer, Nkwako Sekhololo. And next to him, excuse me, I've just forgotten his surname. Sidwe Mayaba, who is our Supply Chain Manager. And we're all here to try and ensure that we can answer the questions that were posed to us by the committee and address any concerns. Chair, with your indulgence, what the plan is that I would begin with the presentation, and in certain areas where the general, the senior commissioners are involved in the work, they're going to talk to it to the committee, and just some guidance from you. I'm taking it that you would like us to present, and then there will be questions at the end of the presentation. Okay. Thank you very much.
Sorry, Chair. My name is Golam Nele, Parliamentary Liaison Officer.
In the info business day.
Mike Senny from Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Indulgence, Mr. Governor is quite an expert at IT. Could I ask him to assist? I can't promise that he can assist. Chair, I'm perfectly comfortable to proceed, and I think the beginning part, in any event, is quite easy to explain without the benefit of technology. I always say technology is wonderful until it doesn't work. Just by way of a starting comment to the committee, and thank you very much for the invitation, we're most honored, is that the presentation is quite long, but it's because we spent quite a lot of time trying to focus on the questions that the committee asked us and to try and make sure that we answered them with a provincial focus and not only a national focus. We apologize for that, but we're not going to talk to every single slide. Some of it is really for committee members to have information for their provincial-related issues. So we'll jump over those slides, so please don't panic so much when you see the 84 slides presentation. And given the fact that, while you did ask us a whole lot of questions, that in this term of this committee, I don't recall that we've given a detailed presentation. So the first few parts, I thought I should just place and introduce the CTMA for the members who haven't had the benefit. I know you have, but other members who haven't had the benefit of just understanding how the CTMA works and what the work of the CTMA is. So I'll spend the first few minutes on that and then go into the questions that the committee specifically posed to us, if that's in order. So as a starting point, I'll just give you an overview of the presentation, and that is going to be introducing the CTMA to the committee. Then we're going to deal with strategic governance and ethical framework of the CTMA, slightly broader, but dealing with the questions that were posed by the committee. And then a question that the CTMA, the contribution to job creation and the poverty alleviation that the CTMA is making. And then raising awareness and addressing accessibility in rural areas. And then addressing some of the successes and challenges of the CTMA. In some cases, successes and challenges are the same thing. And then, obviously, the committee asked us how could we all work together and some assistance. We've got some suggestions on that. In no ways are they meant to be definitive. It's more to be a conversation and to try and get some guidance in relation to that. So with your leave, I will move straight into introducing the CTMA to the committee. And just to say that the mission of the CTMA is to be the premier dispute prevention, management, and dispute resolution organization in South Africa. And our mission statement is to promote social justice and economic development in the world of work, and to be the best dispute management and dispute resolution organization trusted by our social partners. And for those of you who are not familiar with the Labor Relations Act, that's actually what we're enjoined to do, promote social justice and economic development by that law. In setting up our vision and our mission, we also thought it was very important, being a new organization, to have very specific values. And as you can see on the next slide, we have six very specific values, and we try and, on a monthly basis throughout the organization, focus on different aspects of that value, and we try and highlight the importance of those values. I think what's important for us at the moment is to make sure that we're transparent in our work, and the focus that's been in the last few years, which is the second last value, and that is the issue of accountability, to make sure we hold ourselves to the commitments that we give and the outcomes of our work, and we're committed appropriately to each other and the work that we do in relation to that. And then just by way of focusing everyone, the Labor Relations Act sets out very, very specific mandates for the CTMA, and those deal with its functional purpose. CTMA's functional purpose is to conciliate workplace disputes and to arbitrate those disputes that remain unresolved, to facilitate the establishment of workplace forums and statutory councils, not a very popular section that's utilized, but we do have quite a facilitatory role in a different way which we can talk about, and then compile and publish information and statistics about our activities, some of which we will present to you today, and then we have to consider applications for accreditation and subsidy from bargaining councils and private agencies. We can be called upon to supervise ballots of trade unions and employers' organizations, which is a function we can also charge for. And then a more compulsory section, and that is to provide training and advice on the establishment of collective bargaining structures, workplace restructuring, consultation processes, termination of employment, employment equity programs, and dispute prevention. What is interesting, and we're very grateful to the committee has asked us quite a lot about that work, and we don't often get asked about that, and it's actually an area of work that we think is very important, so we're quite honored that you've asked us to discuss that area of our work with you. Having just briefly set that out to you, while these are our functional purposes, we have in the last 2 years also by process of the social partners that we report to, and I think that you're very aware of, and we're going to talk to you about that, been given an additional mandate, and that is to be part of the implementing agency for the training layoff scheme. That is not set out in the legislation anywhere, and it arose out of the presidential working group and the presidency and the decision that they made in relation to that. But it is obviously one of our functions now, and it's accepted on that, and we hope for that will actually become one of our stated mandates going forth. And we'll talk a little bit about that later. Given you now a bit about that, a layout of our vision and mission, what we do, what our work is, I'm going to now move specifically into our strategic governance and ethical framework, and just to briefly outline to you certain aspects of the work that we do. We obviously operate in terms of the PSMA, and in terms of government reporting, we have the strategy that we had. In the end of last financial year, we finished our last three-year strategy, and that was the social strategy, which was to revive and reawaken the CCMA. And building on that, we started a new strategy, which began in last financial year and goes on for the next five years, and that's the CFMBLA strategy. The intention of that was to build on and move forward on the existing strategy and to ensure that we bedded down all the issues that we set in the previous strategy. We have goals, strategic objectives, and key performance areas, and we're going to report to you on some of those aspects today. The important part of the strategic plan also is that it is what's used to guide the allocation of resources of the organization, and also it's used to guide how we determine how the organization operates and how we make bids to Treasury in the support of the organization. And obviously, the plan outlines how the organization operates and what it's going to do, and it gives performance directives to every single one of the teams that work to make up collectively the CCMA, and how they're going to measure their performance as against that. And without going into too much detail, I thought I would just give you a very high overview of what those strategic goals are and those strategic objectives before I move into the governance framework. The strategic goals of the CCMA are three, and that is we will position the CCMA to impartially promote social justice and economic development in the world of work. We will deliver professional, user-friendly, quality services with speed. We will maintain organizational effectiveness and strive for continuous improvement. Now, underneath each of those strategic goals, there are six strategic objectives which form detailed operational working plans for the organization. And these strategic objectives, which elaborate under each one, are to enrich the role of the CCMA in the labor market, to build skills to achieve professionalism, deliver excellent service rooted in social justice, ensuring a balance between quality and quantity. And then, under the third item, enhance and entrench internal processes and systems for optimal deployment of resources, align the structure that will give optimal implementation of the strategy that we have, and to ensure that we have a proper organizational culture that ensures we deliver on the mandate of the organization. Based on that, we have a scorecard where we have a balanced scorecard and we deliver against that and we measure ourselves against that. If you refer to the annual report which we've handed out to the members of the committee, you will see for the last financial year ending of March of this year, we have the scorecard set out there as against these strategic goals and objectives. That is just a very quick and very brief walk through quite a detailed process in relation to the organization. And then I thought it would be good to just set up the governance structures and to remind everyone how the CCMA obtains its mandate in relation to that. So obviously the CCMA is established in terms of the Labor Relations Act. I don't need to tell the committee that. But just to remind you that it is governed by a governing body, and that governing body is made up of an independent chairperson, and it's made up of members from government, organized labor, and organized business. Those members are nominated through a process at NEDLAC, and then appointed by the Minister of Labour. The governing body is, as I said earlier, the accounting authority in terms of the PSMA, and the governing body has a charter which clearly and concisely sets out its roles, duties and responsibilities, and also obviously the salient governing and corporate governance principles that needs to follow in being the governing body. The governing body's job is to appoint the director, that is me, and it's set out in terms of the law, and that is an independent decision of the board. The Labour Relations Act also specifically gives the governing body certain functions which they are not permitted to give to delegate, and that is that they may not delegate the appointment or the termination of commissioners, deposit or investment of surplus money that the CTMA may have while running its operations, and the accreditation and subsidy functions in relation to bargaining councils. It's also important to note that the law says very specifically, i.e. the Labour Relations Act, which gives the mandate to the CTMA, that the CTMA must operate independently of the state. Any political party, trade union, employer's organisation, federation of trade unions, or federation of employers' organisations. We thought it might be useful to then show you graphically how we've interpreted that governance structure by way of a slide, and that shows you there that, and it's divided out more, that obviously that the executive authority, which is the Minister of Labour, is how the CTMA governing body chairperson reports in to parliamentary structures, and there's the governing body and the director who is virtued by ex officio of her office, also a member of the governing body, and all the subcommittees that I'm going to take you through, which are the governance structures of the CTMA. I think often an often left out section of the CTMA's work, which obviously is because we're just the secretariat and we're not actually directly functional, is the Essential Services Committee, which as you see is to the bottom left of that slide. But actually the Essential Services Committee chair and the committee is actually appointed by the minister. And we don't have any, other than the fact that we run their functions secretarially, we don't have any direct say in relation to that. But I think it's an area at the moment that's under some discussion because it can cause some confusion. But as you can see, in terms of the law, the governing body is entitled to make certain subcommittees, and it has done that. They listed there the Audit Committee and Nomination and Governance Committee, the Accreditation and Subsidy Subcommittee, Human Resources Subcommittee, and the Finance and Risk Subcommittee. And I'll take you through a little bit of detail on that because it covers some of the governance aspects of the CTMA. What's important to note is the governing body is an executive board, and they maintain full and effective control of the governance of the CTMA. And obviously it's developed through the governance structures that I've just started to take you through, and the governing body committees and a delegations of authority framework. The delegations of authority gives a decision-making process and sets out clearly who has the authority to do what, and that's also guided by the law. As I've indicated, the governing body has established the committees which they're entitled to do in terms of the law in order to run the functions of the organisation. And just by way of clarity, the CTMA is a Schedule 3A institution in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, and we have to report in under the requirements in relation to that. The role of the director is obviously to serve as a member of the governing body, and then also to ensure that the strategy as approved by the governing body and its social partners that makes up, that the director manages and directs activities of the commission and implements what the governing body should see. Now, just by way of assistance, because the members are not present, the governing body is, as I've indicated, made up of various members, and there you can see the representatives of organised labour, representing the three labour federations, organised business represented by BUSA, and then the government representatives from the Department of Labour. I'm not going to take you through detail, no doubt at one stage you'll talk to them yourself directly. Now, taking that from the tripartite governing body structure, just to explain to you how the organisation works, we've just set up in detail. So taking that the director is a member of that governing body, sitting here before you, the people I've mainly introduced to you, is the fact that are the the ex-executive committee of the CTMA, people, nearly every person in this room, who came with me. And in addition to that, we have, at this point in time, we are divided, even though we know there are only 9 provinces, we have 10 provincial offices, and though we're busy doing that, making that even more divided, and we'll talk to you a little bit about that. We have what's called convening senior commissioners. They would essentially be the provincial heads of each province of the CTMA, and they are the general managers, for want of a better word, or executive managers of the province, who run the provincial offices of the CTMA, and in there they would have both reporting to them full-time commissioners and part-time commissioners, as well as the administrative staff who give the administrative support to the organization. We were asked a question around managing ethics, so the decision was to try and, in a very quick summary table, take you through all the aspects of how the CTMA operates. We have, firstly, a framework on corporate governance in the CTMA. Let me explain you to the table. At the top, we've got on the left what each of the governance structures are of the CCMA and then how they apply to the relevant people and staff and management and board members in the CCMA. So obviously the framework on corporate governance, which we try and comply firstly with the regulations by Treasury and the King III report, would apply to everyone, and that's across the table, governing body members, management, commissioners, and staff. The governing body itself has a charter which gives it directions, tells it what it's got to do and what its guidance is, and that the same applies for the subcommittees that I indicated to you earlier, Human Resources Subcommittee, the Remuneration Subcommittee, the Audit Committee, the Finance and Risk Subcommittee. They also have charters that apply to that. In addition to that, and that's mainly the members that are in the room today, we have a charter for the Executive Committee of the CCMA, and that Executive Committee has subcommittees, and those subcommittees all operate in a similar way, in a reflective way to some degree, but at a more operational management level, and they also have charters and they have obligations that they are required to do. Then moving into the importance of the governance and the framework issue, we have an enterprise risk management framework at the moment, and a process that we're busy implementing. That's, I would say, fairly new, but not totally new, nearly 2 years old now. And we're going through the process and the recognized international criteria for ensuring that we have an enterprise risk management process. We've done risk registers, and the process takes some time. We'll be managing and evaluating, and then we're on our second round of evaluation. So we're starting to apply that more appropriately. As you can see by the little hearts that I've put in each thing, that applies to everybody in the organization, the governing body members, the management, the commissioners, and the staff. We also have an internal audit function, and that internal audit function operates as an independent section, and it reports into the audit committee, and the internal auditor obviously has a dotted line reporting to the director, and is also involved in the executive committee of the CCMA, but they have an independence, and they do internal audits for the CCMA. Very importantly, the next item, a code of conduct for commissioners, which is very settled and by the governing body, and it's been in place since the CCMA commenced 15 years ago, and that is how the commissioners should conduct themselves. And now the reason why that is demonstrated there for commissioners and management, because in the CCMA, commissioners are sometimes management as well, so we've put it there to demonstrate both, but commissioners can be held accountable, and as I said to you earlier, that conduct, code of conduct is applicable specifically to commissioners in relation to the governing body. So that if a commissioner violated the commissioner code of conduct, there would be a process, and I'll explain to you the complaints process and the investigation process a little bit later, but that process would be then recommended to the governing body, and only the governing body could take up any violation in relation to the code of conduct for commissioners. More recently, we have introduced a code of conduct for support staff, which would be staff who are not qualified as specifically as commissioners, or in the senior management and follow under other disclosure applications that we have. And that also would apply that they are obliged to follow certain criteria and to follow certain processes in relation to that. And that's particularly in relation to their conduct, how they operate, and what they do in relation to that. Then very importantly, to make sure that we are appropriately managed and that the things that we do are measured and that people have the right to complain, is that we have an external hotline which is managed by an independent service provider to report any misconduct or any fraud. That is managed by the internal audit section of the CCMA, and any specific issues that related there to are either raised with me if they're relevant to me, or they could be raised directly with the chairperson of the governing body. Chairperson of the governing body, of course, because it's not a full-time appointment, also has a private email address where anybody can raise any areas of concern with her, and she can either raise those through the audit committee or the internal audit, but all related to that, and that applies to everybody as well as the users of the CCMA. There are signs up all over our buildings indicating that if you've got any concerns around that. Unfortunately, sometimes that it gets confused about what is fraud and what is a complaint because your case is taking too long. But it is a very beneficial issue, and it does give us insight into what might be going on in the organization. I'm actually happy to say that in the last, I'm a bit nervous to say this actually, but it's really been, we had a lot of activity for a while, but it's actually been declined, and I think it's because we've been focusing very strongly in the last 18 months on our governance framework. Also applying to everybody is the policy on conflict of interest and disclosure. And I have no doubt the committee and sitting and listening to people know the importance of this. And this is in relation to, and the easiest example I can give on this is that members of staff of the CCMA or management or the governing body have to disclose any interest that they may have in anything. You may not do business with the CCMA if you're an employee of the CCMA. You may not be on the board of the CCMA. Or if you are doing business, you need to get permission for that and you need to disclose that up front. So that policy on interest and conflict of interest and disclosure applies both to that, and at the commencement of every year, we make sure people disclose in relation to that. In addition to that, we ensure that at every meeting, people declare if they have any interest in relation to that. And as you can see by the little hearts that are represented in our managing ethics table, that policy applies to everybody, governing body members, management, commissioners, and staff. And also very importantly, in relation to staff and commissioners, we have an application for extraneous employment. So that if somebody does decide that they want to do some extraneous employment, and let me give you an example in relation to a commissioner. A commissioner may do work as a lecturer at a university in relation to industrial relations. We wouldn't want to stop them doing that. We think that that spreads the message, so we wouldn't prevent them from doing it, but you need to disclose it. But we wouldn't allow somebody to run a business that's in competition with or doing direct business with the CCMA unless special permission had been granted. We obviously also get people who do work in their communities, and obviously we want to support that kind of work and encourage this amongst our staff. Just by way of a process and to make sure that everybody understands, we also have a very specific complaints process, and this is a diagram that's set up here, and we make sure that if we get complaints in, that we investigate them. We also give people opportunity to respond. We have a process where we receive the complaint, we register the complaint, we investigate the complaint on the sides of both parties. We get a report drafted, and we have then the report outcome is tabled in the correct form. And as I indicated to you, in relation to commissioners, that goes through the Human Resources Subcommittee of the governing body and then the governing body itself, and then support staff, it goes to the executive committee members in relation to that. Then based on that, the decision is taken or the appropriate action or measure is implemented. The decision is implemented and the communication is effected with that individual, and then there's closure in relation to that. That would obviously also apply to any complaint that you may have in relation to cases or operations of the organization. Moving on to an area that the committee specifically asked us to address, and we're going to try and deal with it in a specific way, and that is the governance structures of supply chain management and the supply chain management process, which has had some focus in the CTMA in the last year or two. We're very comfortable to say we've made huge progress in relation to that, and that is that the governing body approved a new supply chain management policy in April of this year, and as a result of that, the director, myself, needed to establish certain governance structures, and that was a bid specification committee, a bid evaluation committee, and a bid adjudication committee. Very comfortable to report that those committees have been established. They have charters, they have chairpersons, there are reports, there are minutes, and I will take you through the details of what happens in relation to that. What was particularly important in establishing that was the process needed to include a separation of the adjudication authorities and the awarding authorities, and that we now have very clearly in the organization. Why did this arise? This arose in relation to the fact that in the audit of the Auditor General during 2009-2010 pointed out to the CCMA that they didn't believe the CCMA supply chain policy complied with all certain of the legal prescripts. Now, there was some debate that went in relation to that from the CCMA side, because the CCMA believed that its governance structures were actually more stringent than was required by the policies of the AG and Treasury. But having debated it with everybody, we thought it was more important to actually comply with and take the direction from the AG. So what did we do as a result of that? And in the conjunction with the governing body, advice from me. Firstly, I suspended in my capacity the accounting officer the existing supply chain policy, which I just refer to that as the old policy in August 2010, and that was on advice from the Auditor General. And then as a result of that, as an interim measure, the CCMA complied with the existing legal prescripts of Treasury and their regulations while a new supply chain policy was being drafted. That new supply chain policy was drafted in conjunction and consultation with National Treasury and the Auditor General. We wanted to make sure that they completely agreed with every section that we put in place. It took a little bit of time, but we're very comfortable now. We have a policy and then a manual and a guideline that is clear for staff to understand, for everybody to implement in relation to that. As a result of that, as I've indicated already, the governing body implemented and approved the new policy with its meeting effective on the 1st of April of this year. Now, based on that policy, because there are on a regular basis Treasury guidelines that come out or changes, the governing body has to review that or update or amend that policy when they meet quarterly, if necessary, if the Treasury has put out a new criteria and that's part of the policy now in relation to that. Arising out of that, the governing body felt very strongly, and there was a directive to the management to train all staff on the new supply chain management policy and to ensure that there was regular reporting on the supply chain management processes into the governing body to ensure it had appropriate oversight. I'm very comfortable to say that we have tried very hard to implement this and to make sure that we've educated staff, and to the point where my staff get quite frustrated because I focus on supply chain management more than service delivery, but we think it's so important. That's an absolutely critical area of our work at the moment. So what have we done to implement the supply chain management policy? We firstly took the supply chain management unit itself and capacitated it more, and we're working on this a little bit more. I think one of the issues that we learned in this process is that we have all, because, and I'll talk to you a little bit later when we talk about our work, about the fact that the CCMA is always challenged with its resources because its caseload goes up. And so we always put money towards the cases and not necessarily to capacitating ourselves in compliance issues. But we've had a very, very strong 18 months on compliance, and we're also working towards that in this year to make sure that all the compliance aspects are complied with. But obviously that takes resources, and but it's important that we do that. We've also trained all the management in the organization, in the organization on supply chain management policy and procedures, and we believing that we have had a change management process there, and we're bedding that down very, very specifically. We've also set up, as I indicated earlier, the governance structure, the collect supply chain, and they're streamlined and they're improved and they're now in line with all the Treasury regulations as required. In addition to that, we insisted, even if people were experts, that they re-went on training if they were members of any of the governance committees of the supply chain process. Following on from that, to ensure that the governing body also was comfortable, the governing body and its subcommittees, in particular its audit, finance and risk subcommittee, are playing a very active role in observing, supporting and ensuring that all supply chain management processes are properly implemented and are dealt with and addressed. Okay. Should I continue, Chair? Okay. I think what's important to note, and you will see it in the financial annual report that we've given you, is that the Auditor General commented specifically on the improvement in the supply chain policies in the CCMA in the last 18 months, and they commended the CCMA on the implementation of that, and that the need for deviations and non-compliance is significantly reduced. And we're hoping and targeting that this year we would actually improve on that even more, and that's important to us going forward. Just to summarize and to make sure that we clarify that the monitoring and evaluation of supply chain management processes are very important. And we have implemented other issues and other requirements that we are required to do. One is that I'm required to submit to National Treasury and the Department of Labor every month by the 10th of the following month a report on any activities in relation to supply chain processes, and we are complying with that. All the supply chain management officials need to sign declarations on a regular basis disclosing conflicts of interest, and we have the DOL, the Department of Labor, I assume as a committee you know that, to make sure that we get security clearance certificates for all supply chain management officials so there can be no issues that arise out of those issues. Then also that we are making sure that if we have any deviations from supply chain, and those things do arise from time to time, and a good example is, let's give an example, that let's say the air conditioning was broken down here and we were all very hot and we needed to get somebody in to fix the air conditioning quickly, you wouldn't be able to follow the necessary supply chain process, but it would be a justifiable reason and that would be seen as a deviation. So we have a deviation register, but the only person who can authorize that is the director in the capacity of the accounting officer, and we have a register in relation to that. But what's important is that the governing body members also get reported on that, and they see that regularly in relation to that. What's also important is that there are certain deviations, that if they go over a certain amount, they need to be complied with and applied to National Treasury, and we make application to National Treasury to make sure that they agree that we are following the required procedures and that we comply with the procedures that go with that. And so we're feeling very comfortable. While we've had some challenges on supply chain management, we've certainly made a huge improvement in relation to the implementation of that. While there's always room for improvement in relation to aspects, we think that we've done a significant job in ensuring that we bed down supply chain management and navigate some of the confusion that sometimes arises in relation to the national treasury processes in relation to that. So that ends the section that addresses the introducing the CCMA and the strategic governance and ethical framework of the CCMA. Next question that I want we would like to address, and it's relating to what the committee asked us, and that is the contribution to job creation and poverty alleviation. I'm going to hand over to the National Senior Commissioner for Capacity Building and Outreach, Mr. Jeremy Daphne, and he's going to take you through some of that aspect. And also in that time, he'll also be addressing issues in relation to the training layoff. There will be some of the other senior commissioners and myself who will come in on certain aspects, but he will take you through the presentation in relation to that. Commissioner Daphne.
Honourable Chair, members, I think this question is very much about the agony and the ecstasy. It's the ecstasy of some wonderful successes we've had, which I'll describe it very briefly. The agony is how frustratingly difficult I think it is for all of us to significantly contribute to poverty alleviation and job creation. And particularly in terms of the training layoff scheme, we'll share with you some of the challenges we've had. The slides are quite detailed, which might have given you a heart attack. I'm going to draw very briefly from the slides and rely on the information being recorded in the slides. Okay, what I'm going to do is firstly draw the links to poverty alleviation, and that might be a debatable issue. So we'll be making suggestions on how does the CCMA in fact contribute to job creation and poverty alleviation as a dispute resolution and prevention institution. And that caused me a couple of sleepless nights, to be honest. But I hope I'll interest you in that regard. Then we're going to go on and talk about the nature of the work involved. What actually is the work that's contributing towards job creation, poverty alleviation? And is it actually? We'd like to give you some facts and figures in that regard. And then thirdly, we'd like to then go into what we term our job saving strategy, of which the training layoff is an integral part, and to contextualize the training layoff scheme as initiated by NEDLAC and implemented by a range of partners within our job saving strategy. And then lastly, I'd like to end off with some conclusions, some proposals, and maybe some suggestions on assistance. We do have some blockages, and we're quite hamstrung in that way. Okay, obviously, firstly, we would suggest the direct and indirect contribution that the CCMA makes. This is mainly done through two areas of work, but not limited to that. The first is the ongoing development and delivery of our job-saving strategy, and I will elaborate on that in a minute. The second relates to our outreach services, and the next question will address that as well. In this case, in terms of capacity-building activities on how to address job insecurity and business distress. And we suggest that just through the act of promoting and offering capacity building regarding job and employment security, and secondly, through the actual saving of jobs, and we will give some facts and figures and let you be the judge on that. That's a direct contribution to poverty alleviation. It's that person's family, that person, and all her or his dependents. And we've got the perspective that every job is worth fighting for, every single one. And you know, the reference to, well, the training layoff scheme, what about the million jobs lost? I'll talk to that, and I hope I can convince the House that that's not a legitimate perspective. Indirectly, we would suggest that the CCMA makes an important contribution to the two areas, poverty alleviation, job creation, simply through its work, through its dispute resolution work, through its dispute prevention and outreach work, and promotion of employment security. And we suggested it does contribute, even if it's in quite a small way, to the maintenance of economic and industrial stability. Minister Patel, in talking to the launch of the training layoff scheme, or the initiation, referred quite a bit, and I hope I'm citing correctly here, that what's important in our economy, what the first step is to maintain our industrial base, that's what he was arguing, and likewise with all sectors, not only the manufacturing sector, on which to build. And we believe that's where the CCMA is coming in. Yes, we're not creating jobs directly, except for the staff we employ in the CCMA, and I think we generate a lot of income for part-time commissioners as well. Oops, I shouldn't have mentioned it. But in terms of forming a base, a basis on which to build, and saving jobs, we believe we are playing a significant role, and more importantly, we've got a future potential role, which is much more exciting and much more dynamic, I'd like to suggest. Okay, so to go into our job-saving strategy, the second aspect. Over the years, we have been in the process of facilitating job insecurity situations, developing our approaches, developing our skills, developing our mechanisms. With the advent, in particular, of the training layoff scheme, it had one huge indirect benefit, and that was it acted as a stimulus, as a catalyst, as an energizer, not only within the CCMA, but I would suggest with all parties that have grappled with it, to deal with the bigger issue of employment security and job saving. Employment security in particular when you look at sectors as opposed to individual businesses. And that has resulted in us developing what we would call a fully fledged job saving strategy. And some elements of it, firstly, it's a multi-pronged process, and it's aimed at dealing with all the factors at play in a perceived, and I'm deliberately using that word, or potential, or actual job insecurity situation. We've had quite a lot of interesting examples of perceived job insecurity situations, where once there's an intervention, it becomes clear that there isn't. But that's an important intervention in itself. And I know that might sound as a controversial statement. I'll do my best to make controversial statements, seeing it's so hot and sweaty in here. Help us make it more lively. Okay. What is our overall objective as the CCMA regarding the whole world of employment security, job saving, dealing with retrenchment, which is the agony? Gosh, we deal with retrenchment. We'll give you some figures. And it's not all good at all. If you could keep it on that one. Thanks, Nelson. Okay. Our overall objective, we've got a rather flowery objective here. It's not written in our strategy. But it's, I think, important to leave no stone unturned in pursuing the quest for business health and job security. And we're promoting that perspective with all our commissioners, and we're doing our best to promote a mindset change within parties that come to the CCMA, to not leave that stone unturned, and all those stones unturned. And we need to go into the backyard and look for that other stone that might save that business as well. But where this is not possible, which unfortunately is the case some of the time, to not let any retrenched worker walk into the sunset without facilitating the provision of survival and support mechanisms. That's where we need help, because that's a multi-partner engagement. We've got so many resources out there, but the synergy is not there, I would suggest, to an adequate extent at least. So to not let any worker walk into the sunset who has been retrenched. Okay. You have a slide on the key aspects of the job-saving strategy. I won't go through it all, to keep to my promise, to be brief. But basically, it begins with looking at business rescue, looking at the business, and looking at what can be done there. It does rely on early warning systems. It does rely on the CCMA being contacted in time. And of course, you might be thinking, well, what does the CCMA know about business rescue? And I'm going to be bold and say very little. We don't claim to know a lot. But however, what we believe we can do is facilitate social dialogue, facilitate partnerships. And in this case, we've been very successfully, bearing in mind it's at a very early stage, facilitating partnerships with the Industrial Development Corporation and Productivity SA, the two. We hope to be facilitating further partnerships. And I have some wonderful case studies. I just got a letter yesterday from SAC2 and IDC, where the combination of the CCMA facilitating, acting as the conduit for communication between parties who were not really talking with each other, the National Skills Fund, the UIF, the CETA involved, and the union, and the company. And it took many hours of telephone calls, emails, and some face-to-face meetings. But a business has been saved, Colibri Tiling. And it's involving a training layoff scheme and an IDC intervention. The IDC are actually becoming a majority shareholder in the company. And it's all going beautifully after some difficult times. So that's part of this approach. Okay, and then it ends, I'll go right to the end, with the facilitation of survival and support mechanisms, as I have discussed. Here we have one partner, but to be honest, the partnership needs a lot more work, and that is the promotion of employment department, of the Department of Labor. We here are looking at collaboration in terms of how we can support workers who have been retrenched. And there's quite a lot of detail to that, which I won't go into now. But basically, I'll give one example. It could, in terms of claiming UIF, instead of each retrenchee having to go and queue up and battle through the bureaucracy in a UIF office, we do it as a group and facilitate it in advance. So it's all processed together. There are lots of examples like that. We don't claim to have had a lot of success here, and it needs a lot more work, but the potential is enormous. Also, CETA involvement at this stage is so important, and we, from a CCMA perspective, doing our best again to facilitate communication between the relevant CETAs and the affected workers. Overall, we've embarked on a new journey of continuous exploration of new and improved approaches and mechanisms through sharing of experiences, through holding workshops. We've had two this year already with our facilitators to address this whole area. And we believe, as a CCMA, we can never say we know what to do. We're doing it well enough now. It's a continuous process of learning and engagement. Okay, here we get on to some facts and figures. This is what we call our Section 189A large-scale facilitation process. Large-scale companies can come to the CCMA for facilitation where a retrenchment seems likely. Unfortunately, with our small-scale conciliation process, we get the parties once retrenchment has occurred, and that makes it quite problematic. But I think the figures speak for themselves. Between 2009 up to 2011 to date, jobs saved through the actual formal facilitation process from our perspective, 28,325. You notice that's in bold, but the number of employees retrenched, we tried to not put in bold, but it's just as important, of course. 31,103. Why haven't we saved those jobs? In the average retrenchment exercise at the stage, we get the problem, as opposed to a new approach we're adopting now, where our success rate is much better. In every average retrenchment exercise, so Mark, I want to add here, we unfortunately don't save all the jobs. We do our best to contribute towards business stability and the retrenchment unnecessarily of workers. So 31,000 still. We always get, if you notice the figures of employees likely to be affected, 105,000, that's quite a big figure. So we often start an exercise with a very big figure, and our 28,000 is not taken as a proportion of the 105,000. That's just to give an idea of what we get in the form when a referral is made. So that's just a snapshot figure for large-scale retrenchments. I'd just like to add, we don't have a slide on it, but small-scale job loss, small-scale businesses, numerically, in terms of job loss, is equal to or more than large-scale retrenchments in total. And it's an area where we're having very little success. And I think CCMA needs to be upfront about that. We do our best in the conciliation process, but we meet the parties after the retrenchment has occurred. We've had, I think, one training layoff linked to that, but it has to involve re-employment or reinstatement, probably re-employment. And it's a very difficult situation, but we have a project working on that as part of our job-saving strategy. We're not giving up on that area.
Can I just come in here and clarify for the members? A small-scale retrenchment would only come to the CCMA once the retrenchment's already been affected. And so we wouldn't be able to intervene unless the parties came to us before the negotiation. And that's obviously an area or a legal issue that's quite a challenge. Whereas in the big, large-scale retrenchment, there's almost an obligatory process to come to CCMA in advance of the retrenchment being effective. And that's partly why we're struggling in relation to that. Sorry.
Yes, and one strategy we're adopting, and it's also at an early stage, is to develop a new service, and this is not legally entrenched, but an early workplace-based intervention, where as soon as a company or a trade union detects that there's a problem, to contact the CCMA, long before they're thinking of referral, and to engage, and through our partnerships, for us to work out a strategy for that company. So that's an area we're working on. Okay, I'm moving away from our strategy and honing into one important aspect of the strategy and addressing the question with particular reference to the training layoff scheme, achievements and challenges. I won't go into the details of the scheme and how it works, but obviously we could do that if you wish. If I could say at the outset, and I'll try and be controversial again, Honourable Chairperson, I would suggest, and I'm not saying this as a CCMA, but I don't have a CCMA mandate on this, I think, that this is one of the most misunderstood services in the labour market, and one of the most valuable. And I'll set out to try and substantiate that. Firstly, for anybody who'd like to go into more depth here, a lot has been written already, bearing in mind that this is a very new provision in South Africa. And there are publications, there are papers, there's very in-depth research that's been done, including the international experience. And anyone commenting on the training layoff scheme needs to read about the international experience as well. It's so significant, and the linkages with the South African experience is very important, especially learning from the international experience. And we've got a lot to learn there, I'm afraid. Very, very briefly, and I'm not going to go into the whole history, and I'll catch up with Nursen's slide now. We went through a torrid bedding down phase, bearing in mind we had to set this up from scratch. And for the first 6 months, we struggled to get this in place. There's a huge amount of detail we had to get in place. Also bearing in mind, it's a multiple partner arrangement. And I think in all our view, that's one of the problems and one of the challenges at the moment. But we have got through the bedding down phase. And the scheme has been successfully kept afloat for a start. And secondly, it's had surges of uptake, which we'll talk about. It's also had huge challenges from time to time. And I'll be suggesting what is the way forward at the end of my input. But just to give a snapshot, and I won't go through it in detail, from the inception of the scheme, September 2009, in terms of cases that are live and in the system or where the scheme has been completed and we at the other end of the process, those are the figures. It's 178 companies and 11,066 workers, more or less, in terms of the number of workers. And every one of those tells a story, of course. And of those, you might ask, well, what are the results? What's the impact? What's the outcome of this so far? There are 17 cases involving 6,083 workers where the training is completed and the layoff doesn't apply anymore. One very important question which I'd like to mention at the outset is there is a lack of analysis and information on what has been the impact of the scheme once it's been fully executed. And we've done case studies of our own initiative. But in terms of our multi-partner arrangement, as a CCMA, we're the front line. We sell the scheme, we process, we take them right through to a point. But then we say goodbye, and sure enough, they start coming back to us and saying, hey, you recommended the scheme, now what on earth's going on now? And we as a result, gone way past our mandate, as I think many of our partners might tell us, and tell you, in fact, because we brought them into the scheme, we introduced them, and we have a responsibility there, whether we like it or not. And that's a huge challenge. It's been a multi-step arrangement going through a number of other institutions, including the entire CETA system, the National Skills Fund, UIF, Project Evaluation Committee, Interministerial Project Evaluation Committee. And it's quite difficult following and supporting once it's left our area of jurisdiction. There are other facts and figures there. Mercy to go to the next slide. Cases withdrawn and not recommended. Is this a dismal picture? 28 cases, 2,000 workers withdrawn and not recommended. 31 cases, 2,400 workers. Actually not, we'd suggest. To a certain extent, yes, but starting with not recommended by the advisory committee, the first step is the CCMA advisory committee, which processes, and our chairperson is on my left here, of that committee. And there have been three reasons for not recommending. And it's been very controversial, and we've been challenged, and we get into a lot of hot water here, and it is one of our difficulties right now. And the advisory committee is public enemy number one amongst certain role players in the labor market. And that's why Axel's got more gray hair than he should have at his age. But, sorry. The primary reason, and it's a controversial thing and a very sensitive thing, but over 50% of those cases, it's because the business wasn't in distress. The benefit of our advisory committee is they've been interrogating, they've been assessing based on fairly full divulgence of information, but not completely, of course, and there is an element of doubt sometimes, that the business actually shouldn't have been talking about job loss. It shouldn't have even been talking about training layoffs. And the advisory committee clearly brings that to the surface. And then we feed back to the parties. And more often than not, there's a trade union involved as well who has agreed that job loss is necessary now. It raises a huge challenge around capacity, and it's a controversial thing again around mindset change, and it's an important project in itself. We'd like to suggest two other reasons prevail. The one is that the employment contract is not in place. The one aspect about the training layoff rules is that there must be an employment contract. And we've had cases recently involving subcontractors, for example, where the employment contract is not in place. Also, if the company has been liquidated and they apply for training layoff, the contract's not in place. It has put us into difficulty. There's still very, very desperate workers involved and a desperate company wanting to survive or business. And it raises the question of a more holistic approach. Okay, what I'll do now is just very briefly go through the uptake in terms of the histogram and then look at some of the achievements and the challenges. This graph or histogram tells a story, and the story is about what has been happening between the implementation partners. The dips reflect where there's been a decision that needs to be taken to rectify a problem and the time it's taken to make that decision, bearing in mind the different layers and structures that are involved. And once the decision has been taken, there's been an upsurge again. And if I could just mention, in about August 2010, in fact July 2010, it became apparent that one of the rules, which is a linkage to the global economic crisis, was no longer making sense. We were getting case after case where the business was clearly in distress, but no link to the global economic crisis in terms of the time frames and the way it was applied. And we needed to get that rule changed. It took quite a while, about 5 months, to get it changed. And over that period, the scheme nearly collapsed. It went right down to zero on November 10, for example. And it links directly to that problem, or at least to a large extent. Then an announcement was made that it's been delinked, and there was immediate improvement, but there were still problems with the application of that, and that tells the story of this curve. But also month by month, I think, in terms of business cycles, in terms of challenges from sector to sector, I think it's inevitable that it's quite an undulating curve. I'll give an example. Very recently, as you probably know, we've had an avian flu outbreak. No one corrected.
Bird flu.
outbreak in the ostrich farming sector. It stands to destroy the sector. It's very serious in the Southern Cape. It's a thriving sector, and it has associated downstream businesses, tanneries, a tourist industry. The whole sector could come to a standstill. Now, that couldn't have been predicted. So the whole sector is approaching the CCMA for training layoffs. And we're working very hard on that. There are problems, though, in terms of eligibility, etc. Okay, Nelson, if you go on. All right, I'll be quick now. Bearing in mind you have the slides, we believe and we would argue that just in terms of statistics, that's an achievement in itself. And it's not just a drop in the ocean. And it has to be contextualized within the broader quest where a multi-pronged strategy is needed. Secondly, yeah, the scheme was really established against severe odds and really had to be conceptualized from scratch. And I've referred to Atlantis Foundries. Atlantis Foundries in just outside Cape Town was our first applicant in December 2009. It's been our most successful applicant. We've written a case study on it. It's a wonderful story, and I'm deliberately mentioning it. There were 1,000 workers. 576 about went on a training layoff. And, yeah, 567 went on training. The training was interesting. The scheme does allow for great flexibility in terms of training. And they had training in engineering skills, problem solving, team building, communication, safety management, etc. And all the workers were successfully reabsorbed into the company, bearing in mind the employment contract remains in place. And the training layoff didn't have to be carried out for the time period agreed, because business started to pick up after about 3 months. And so it tided the company through that period. And I think the management statement, this is from an article in the Labour Bulletin, is very simple, but he says it was a great help and carried us through the storm. And that's the whole purpose of the training layoff. There's lots of other success stories, and we can circulate them if you wish. There's a very interesting story to be told, we have mentioned it already, around collaboration, cooperation of implementing partners. Well, I've been challenges as well. In terms of building of partnerships and synergy, it's been a very important exercise. It's also, and I've already talked to it, it's acted as a stimulus for the CCMA's own job-saving strategy. There's a whole range of indirect benefits apart from that. One is a very simple one, and that is we get a request for training layoff. Our facilitators meet with the parties, explain how it works. Then they start looking at the business and engaging. And then it becomes apparent that there are other alternatives that were not explored in the initial process and which now get explored. So it's added a rigor to the process of dealing with job insecurity, business distress, which has had positive results. In conclusion on the achievements, as the CCMA, we believe the concept is sound. The criticism of the scheme, of which there's been quite a lot, in our view, is missing the point. It's looking at some of the details of the scheme, how it's presently arranged. And in terms of the current design of the scheme, we'd be the first to suggest it needs more attention. The design is too bureaucratic. It is too complex. It involves too many partners. But in terms of the concept of combining an allowance with skilling, with relief for the business in terms of paying salaries and tiding over a period of time a very, very important service. And the international experience bears this out. And we could also circulate a very good paper that was done last year researching the international experience in crisis-ridden economies over the last 4 or 5 years. So overall, our message is that we believe the concept is sound and it's got huge potential. It just needs more work, more attention. And I'll just mention one or two challenges. I've mentioned most of them already. I'm just skimming through the slides. And I'll just dwell on two. One is, as we phrased it in the slide, accountability to one ultimate authority with the power to direct effective implementation and make the necessary interventions not adequately in place. Having a clearly defined central structure and a champion to drive this process, I would suggest, is not adequately in place. It's still a multi-partner initiative involving three ministries. The Department of Higher Education and Training has administrative responsibility now for it, but the scheme is not getting driven, and that is problematic. So I'd conclude with the obvious proposal, and that is the scheme should be seen as a permanent feature of our landscape, but it needs a more streamlined design. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I'm now going to hand over to Mr. Ndal, who works with Mr. Daphne in relation to raising awareness in rural areas and on the question that you raised in relation to that. Please, we will be speed up and we will also not go through all the slides. They're more also there for members to get benefit, as I indicated, for their professional benefit. Mr. Ndal.
I think if we can be brief so that members can ask questions, and even if you won't be able to answer all the questions, to be able to assist us for our strategic plan, then we will send the responses.
But
I really apologize to...
No, not a problem. Not a problem. Okay,
thank you, Honorable Chair and members of the committee. I'm supposed to respond to the question on how the CCMA plans to raise awareness of the organization services in rural areas. I would say we are not going to be planning. We have already started doing exactly that. Though we still have a lot to do, it's part of our operational plan for the year 2012-13. I am going to be talking to that question, looking at the different outreach services that we deliver targeting rural communities. And most of the services that we deliver, their central core is our mandate of social justice. I will talk to that as well. I will also identify some of the mechanisms that we reach or that we use to reach out to rural communities. And I will also want to share with the members the number of activities that we have conducted year to date, meaning from the 1st of April to the 31st of October. And I will also refer to the activities that we have conducted in the previous financial year. We will be sharing with you on what we have planned going forward, but I will pause and I will talk to that when we jointly talk with the general manager on our accessibility as the CCMA. The CCMA delivers its outreach, its capacity building and outreach services through the department known as the Dispute Management and Prevention Department. This department started as a very small department and it was focusing on delivering workshops, but as we speak, it's a This department now delivering multitude of activities each year, reaching out to the entire South Africa, I can say, and to most, if not all, rural areas as we speak. The focus of our activities are mostly capacity building, information sharing, and awareness raising. How do we raise awareness? We normally raise awareness on the law, workplace rights, and the services that the CCMA offers, and we use radio talk shows. That's the tool that we use to reach out to the rural communities. We also use Izimbizo meetings and road shows. We also provide capacity building on the law using our best practice workshop training and our presentations and seminars. But I think the most important part for awareness raising, or especially when you talk about rural areas, it will be our radio talk shows, it will be Izimbizo meetings and the road show. I indicated that I will be talking to our mandate, of the key mandate, which is the social justice mandate. What do we mean by social justice? We ensure, at the District Management and Prevention Department, we ensure that the CCMA is accessible to all our users countrywide. We also promote the treatment of all our users with integrity, with respect and dignity. We prioritize vulnerable sectors. What I mean by vulnerable sectors, I'm referring to sectors wherein there is a very low level of understanding in terms of workplace rights. I'm talking about sectors wherein you would find that there is a lot of poverty, there is a lot of dependency on the jobs held, wherein the workers can't even challenge anything because they are depending too much on those jobs. How we use radio talk shows? We have got 10 regional offices. In each regional office, we have got a district management and prevention commissioner who also has the support of a pool of commissioners, both part-time and full-time, who assist in delivering this radio talk show. We do have a list of frequently asked questions which we have compiled. We forward those the list of frequently asked questions to the radio stations, and they pick on any topic and they request a commissioner to talk to those questions on air, and they even open up to telephonic engagement with the party. Most of the engagements are done in the languages that are predominant in those areas. We also conduct Izimbizo meetings, wherein we'll send an invite, mostly through radio or through our social partners and stakeholders like DOL, where a CCMA commissioner and a team will go to a particular community, and they will introduce the CCMA and what it does. Depending on the infrastructure that is available, they may even fly a CCMA DVD known as Trouble at Work. They will also discuss workplace rights, and they will open up for question and answers. However, in those individuals, you would find that as and when you engage, you would pick up on people who have got CCMA-related disputes, but they didn't know where to go. And the CCMA will pick up on that, and a referral will be completed. In most cases, you'll find that those cases are out of jurisdiction in terms of the 30-day referral. They will assist the parties in completing the condemnation application. We also partner with DOL, and we conduct road shows where we go to DOL pay points, and at the pay points, we assist employees or workers who have got CCMA-related queries. And again, we also create awareness about the CCMA and what it does. The following tables will just give you a snapshot of what we have conducted to date. These are the activities that have been delivered around our user forums and stakeholder engagements. These are the activities, the total of activities conducted for all these services that we deliver. And if you look at those numbers, you would realize that it's we are just a month after midterm, and it's a lot of activities that have been conducted, and they've really touched thousands and thousands of our people. If you look at this slide that has been slided there, it shows what we have conducted in the previous financial year. And in total, you will realize that 1,123 activities have been conducted throughout South Africa. And these are the activities that really touches most of our vulnerable people. We do have plans. However, we will share the plans when we talk about the CCMA accessibility.
And Chair, now I'm going to hand over to the General Manager for Operations to deal briefly on the accessibility issue and deal with one slide in relation to that.
Thank you, Chair. If you can just focus on the map that's being flighted now. I mean, since 1996, when the CCMA first opened, we only had 9 offices throughout the country. We have now 12 offices plus another 6. And you can see that we have many, more than 480 hearing rooms throughout the country, and also about 250 hearing rooms within our offices. But what is more important, I think, is that we are moving away from the bricks and mortar, building our own offices, but piggybacking on current infrastructure within the country in the form of the Department of Labor offices. They have more than 130 offices. And currently, we've given those officers access to our case management system, where any member can just go to that office and find out the status of their case rather than coming to the CCMA offices. Also, what is important, in the first quarter of next year, people don't have to come to the CCMA offices to refer the cases. They can go to the Department of Labor offices to do that, and we'll pick them up electronically and process it, so thereby saving them time, money, and time to get speedy dispute resolution. I'm not going to go through the other slides. It's there in your pack. But just in terms of accessibility per province, starting with the Eastern Cape, you can see all the areas where we have access in terms of venues, you know, to minimize the travel, especially for the people that live in those areas. Thanks, Chair.
In terms of the dispute management and prevention department, what we have planned to ensure that our services are accessible is to focus more, to intensify our focus on vulnerable sector, agriculture being one of them, fisheries and industries. We're also going to be honing on our quality aspect to ensure that the impact is there, and our theme for this coming financial year is to make a difference to people's lives. So that's where our quality and quality part is coming in. We are also going to be exploring other communication sharing methodology, and an overall yardstick will be to use the services to make a difference. I've already alluded to that. And then we are going to be rigorously promoting our application of the CCMA social justice. And we have already identified a number of promotional materials that we need to translate into other principal languages. And we have decided to develop a capacity building service that will be offered to users on conciliation, sorry, and arbitration hearings and workplace intervention. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Then we will move on to the question that you asked. That's most importantly, what are successes and challenges? I think it's an important point to start with is that we've given you a slide which we've headed selected operating efficiencies. This is a much more detailed slide and it's contained in the annual report if you want to refer to it. But these select out the statutory obligations of the CCMA at a national level. Every single year we set targets for the organization and then for every province that they are required to achieve in relation to our operational work. And these ones particularly relate to the statutory obligations that we have. For example, CCMA must schedule conciliations within 30 days arbitration awards must go to parties within 14 days. What we've got here is from 2007 to 2011 and the improvement in a process in relation to that, and it just summarizes what the key issues are. What we do, and I'm going to get both the general managers and the national senior commissioners to take you through in relation to operations, but we set targets for each province, and we have almost like a little competition to make sure that you achieve the targets and the work that you do in relation to that. So as you can see, we've been trying to work each year to improve the processes that go there. So you can see in the last financial year we've made quite significant improvement, and this year we're actually even improving that even further. What the significant point is that at the moment conciliations are not heard outside of 30 days, and it's now almost a rare occasion that a party would get their arbitration award outside the 14-day time period. And we are trying to make sure that in doing that we do quick and effective, speedy dispute resolution. I'm going to hand to Ms. Govinda and Mr. Bernie Coe, who will just briefly explain to you the next slide and at a glance to show you on a provincial level what the issues are, what we've been targeting, and to see how each of your provinces are doing.
Thank you, Dory. Thank you, Chair. Chair, this slide here, it looks quite busy, but it's actually a snapshot that we circulate on a monthly basis of how we manage our provinces. Just to give you an idea, everything is linked to the strategy, and this here is the regional performance. Now, if you look at the first column, it says requirements, weighting, and then it says ECEL. That would be the East London office. So the rest are all our offices throughout the country. And we use the rating scale of 1 to 5, and that's the same rating scale we use to manage and performance manage our individuals. So everything is quite integrated in that way. Okay? So the first one is the requirements, which Noreen just took you to briefly, and then we have a weighting, and then we rate them on a monthly basis. But it's quite a healthy way of managing them, okay? And from a performance point of view, when we evaluate the individuals, we do factor this in. So there's a combination of individual performance plus the regional performance. I just want to take you through quickly to the bottom section where, if you look at where it says efficiencies met exceeded September 2011, and then if you look at efficiencies met exceeded 2010. Now, our strategy was always to say that all our regions must be meeting a minimum of 60% of our targets as a standard. If you look at a year ago in September, we had approximately 10 offices that were below the 60% target. And if you look at it now, it was just 2 in September 2011. That was Port Elizabeth and Port Shepstone. And I'm pleased to say that in October, Port Shepstone just moved out of that the red mark and is back into the 60%, and we'll be the Scott Port Elizabeth to work with. I'm going to move on now to the next one. This is a snapshot again on a monthly basis for the first 6 months to have a look at how a region is performing. You would notice that I've not put in any figures, but I think those Manhattan skylines actually give you a very good sense of where how the regions are improving or, I'm not sure what the opposite word of improving is, but failing, declining, yeah, that's the right word, declining. And if you look at the orange one is very significant, where just about every region has exceeded from the time that they started in April. So this is something that we discuss on a quarterly basis with our regional managers. And the next slide just gives you from 1998 to 2011, those are full financial years, to show you exactly how the caseload of the CCMA has increased considerably. You know, I think we are just a well-known organization at the end of the day, you know, and picking up from where Jeremy and my other colleagues have actually spoken, you can see the impact of what is happening out there on the CCMA and our work. I think I'll just stop there, yeah.
And I was coming at the end of that slide. I think that it also indicates the CCMA has had some research done which shows that the CCMA caseload also often reflects the economy. And so the caseload goes up when the economy is going up and when we're in a good situation. You can see that clearly in relation to that. That, of course, it's a success if people want to come to the CCMA, it's obviously a resource challenge for the organization because we've got to try and meet all those efficiencies, and we're not like a court where we can say, okay, well, we can't do the cases in this financial year, we'll do them next financial year. The law very specifically indicates to us and tells us that we have to do those cases in a specific time frame, and we pride ourselves on trying to make sure that we meet all those criteria. Mr. Renica.
Just very briefly, I think the big challenge going forward now is to move from, we very well managing the numbers, is to manage improvements in quality now, whether it's arbitration awards, settlement agreements, and a whole range of other qualitative measures we were putting in place. So the numbers we've largely got under control and managing very well, to the extent that we don't have conciliations outside of 30 days, our arbitrations are largely done within 90 days, etc. So I think the target or the challenge moving into the next financial year is going to be the qualitative improvements. Thanks, Madam.
I'm going to hand to Commissioner Sibidar, who is responsible for the national mediations on big disputes, to take you through some of the successes and challenges.
Thank you, Chair. I think for a lot of us, the 2010 FIFA World Cup is like a distant memory. But I think what we all need to remember is that South Africa was awarded a 9 out of 10 for our performance. The CCMA would like to take some little credit for that 9 out of 10 because from about 2007, we were working in the background with parties, with stakeholders who were directly involved in the projects, etc., and really trying to basically ensure that in the run-up to the event and during the event itself, we would have industrial peace. And to a large extent, we actually succeeded in that. In fact, in the months before the run-up to the event, we had set up units in every province, specialist 2010 units that was comprised of the management of the province and selected very experienced commissioners. And we had a very intensive intelligence gathering system by identifying the parties that were involved where industrial action or conflict could actually adversely impact on the event. And the moment we got wind of something, we could very rapidly deploy commissioners to be able to deal with it. So I'm not going to take you any further than that in there, but members can read about it in our annual report. Other than the fact that almost every major strike that you've heard of in the country, at least in the last 2 years, the CCMA was instrumental in resolving. The most recent one would have been the chemical industry strike that played out some months ago. And we like to believe that we have made a major difference in the labor market in that respect. But again, the annual report will contain more details. Thank you, Chair.
I'm moving on just on some Chair, that in the last 2 years, the CCMA has won a gold and silver award for public sector excellence, for the best reputation in the legal sector, an issue which we're very proud of, and we feel we should also celebrate successes. And then in relation to further challenges, we've highlighted them as labour market challenges to a certain degree because they affect the work of commissioners and we do every single day. The first time we've actually dealt with in detail already, and I think the committee is very aware of it, so I'm not going to take you into detail on that. And then also the issue around the fact that there seems to be a perception and a concern around the rise of violence and strikes that is a problem for the CCMA. We seem to be blamed for that, so it's not really in our control. And then obviously, on a daily basis, the commissioners are trying to find a middle ground between the debate in relation to temporary employment services and the challenges that brings to everybody. And then also that we need to make sure that the work that Jeremy, Commissioner Daphne spoke to a little bit earlier about is around the job creation, job preservation is important, and to make sure that the social partners who use the CCMA every day understand the importance of actually the role in relation to that, because sometimes we actually struggle to get people to understand the importance of that at a national level. And then the challenges that we're facing in relation to collective bargaining and the legitimacy of national collective bargaining structures and often the self-regulated sectors, and the fact that there's a ministerial extension of collective bargaining agreements also impacts on the CCMA in relation to some of the strikes that have just been mentioned by Commissioner Subedar. So it's a challenge that commissioners face every single day. Finally, the committee asked us for some comments on assistance. We were a bit hesitant to say it, but we thought it might be a bit cheeky, but we wanted to say a few things together. We wanted to suggest that maybe one of the things is that we've given you some ideas around our road shows, our visas, and so we thought, could we not work together with some constituency offices? Could we possibly get some of the members to come and join some of our visas? We thought that would help in relation to that. And then obviously maybe some joint collaboration on the committee's outreach work and some of our outreach work. And please, that those are in no way exhaustive, just a few suggestions humbly made from us as a way that we thought we could work with the committee and the provinces. And for that, I know we've been long, but we've tried very hard in detail to answer the questions that the committee posed, and thank you very much for listening to us.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Definitely the committee would like you to work within constituencies by actually availing material to constituency offices. Honorable Sibande, Honorable Mlenzana, Honorable Hruneval, Honorable Dibier. That's
all the thanks. Chairperson, I'm happy, but I'm not happy at the same time. I'll start with the chairperson. You see, chairperson, what I request in future, most of the departments, when they come to us, I think you are quite done, more than 100%, to comment that some of the others, they must send them later, because it disadvantages us. Some of the people, they take a ride and not respond to some of the questions. Then come to the department to CCMA. You see, my worry is that Mr. if unfortunately they don't have numbers from their presentation, that document.
I wanted to mention that, yes. That you know, these advantages of more, because if we want to pose a question and it's a text document, it doesn't have numbers. If we want to say, on slide number so and so, it's really difficult with the six document that we have. Thanks,
yes.
For that, Honorable Sivan.
First, you see, my concern with this system AMA, simple. There is a quite difference between a theory and practical. Theoretically, it is represented in all the provinces, while not, it still represents the old system. May you please open from this, which is having a map. I wanted to show you something. You see, I'm from Mpumalanga. The CCMA in their offices, they are not aware that some of the areas which they've put under Mpumalanga, they don't belong to Mpumalanga. They don't. You go to Stratford and there, where's the place? You see, because our worry, you go to Stratford and Marble Hall, Shellport and Marble Hall belong to the Bompo. That means this presentation, I don't know why they say it's representing the old provinces. And that is a concern of the people, because all your offices are very far. And they ask us, because we're from Mpumalanga, if you talk in terms of Mpumalanga, you don't say that you know Mpumalanga if you take your office and put them to Nelspruit, because from Bushbuckridge to Nelspruit is 100 and something kilometers. From Mbuzini to Nelspruit is also 100 and something kilometers. And then from former Gwandebele to go to Nelspruit is 200 and something. To Mortile, and you see, it's very strenuous. That's a problem. And then you check, I was checking somewhere the cases which were reported in Western Cape. You, quite a number of cases. And that is excellent. You know why? It's because when you check the offices where are situated in Western Cape, and more than anything, everywhere the offices of CCMA. So my worry is that why their focus keep on representing the old thinking. If they go to Mpumalanga, they talk about Nelspruit, Secunda, and then if it's crowding everywhere, if it's Western Cape West, West with Western Cape, while most of the challenges are there in those provinces like Eastern Cape and Northern Cape. In Northern Cape, it's worse, it's nothing, where there is a high rate of doping. And then you come to the presentation, say, I've forgotten the name. the checks the mess. But see, there is a thing which is worrying me. You were talking about the issue of training layout scheme. You commented about this scheme. Right? You see, I was concerned when you said you won't give us details of the scheme and how does it work because it's too broad and long. And at the end, you said the scheme needs more attention, more work. The scheme is not getting driven. Need more streamlined design. It's your input, isn't it? So why should we keep such a scheme which doesn't have a driver? It's not driven. That's what you said from your own input. Because I would go back to the why they didn't put numbers. Maybe it's because they thought that the question forwarded, it will be smooth. We won't recognize. No, it's wrong. And then you come to awareness. You see, let us help you in terms of awareness. I'll put practical example. You talk about these roadshows, workshops, presentation, and the radio talk shows. But I'm a little bit concerned about radio talk shows because I will be very comfortable if you cover all radio stations while I'm raising that. If you go to Mpumalanga, some people they're not aware. If they go to Kwala Kwala FM, they'll thought they cover all Mpumalanga. In Mpumalanga itself, the radio doesn't cover the whole Mpumalanga. It covers the upper bit system, which is former Gwangwane. If you go to Ukwekwez, former Gwandebele, the other part doesn't cover it. It's not covered. If you go to Bushbuck Ridge, it needs another radio station. That's complications. And if you go to Northern Cape, there is a recent station which was recently opened, which covers the Ku and the Kwez. I don't think that you said you cover all languages. Ku and the Kwez, they are recognized in this country. I don't think that you do have any program for them, and you ever thought about it. That's nothing. And then another thing which is worrying me, somewhere from your own presentation, I don't know, it was by omission or by mistake. The slide is just repetition of another slide about the delivery and training. I saw when you're giving from the scheme side, you said 76 companies, 11,600. Another slide again, somewhere in your potential safe business, same numbers. I don't know. Maybe if you can clarify, maybe I'm mistaken, because to me, it's just reputation, same page, like this. And another thing which is worrying me about the report of the Auditor General, in leadership, underline, in terms of leadership, yes, it's correct, but in terms of the leadership itself, the accounting authority and management of the CCMA did not exercise adequate oversight to prevent and detect irregular expenditure and ensure compliance with treasury regulations regarding supply chain management and systems. That is our main challenge, because what is happening in most of, that's where our people are not with in terms of tenders and some of these things. I'm making an example with that one, because I don't think it was by mistake or omission why the Treasurer General, the Auditor General raised this. He raised it in your own report on page 65, there, last paragraph, in terms of the leadership. And then also, another thing which I wanted to highlight is this. You see, there is a page somewhere in your screen which is very, very important, you know. Unfortunately, I don't have the page. The contribution to job creation. In terms of SONA, when the President Okelehle Isazuma spoke about job creation, he appealed to the institution, all and the government, that they must contribute in terms of job creation. And then you said in your own presentation, the director decided. CCMA makes direct and indirect contribution to job creation and poverty alleviation. And then whatever. So my problem is that from the side of the CCMA, I'm not sure whether I have it correctly. So how, if they can give us statistics that in terms of their contribution is like this, except the issue of you defended so much job and whatever. And then the last one is about the skills development. I was happy when I see, look at your organogram, you said all these people are from South Africa, but like other people who are having problem of scarce skills. And then if there's anything which you are doing, simple, what is CCMA contributing in the various provinces in terms of skills development? Ma, I've got a lot of things, so I wanted to give to my colleagues, but I'm seriously offended. If you talk about provinces, involve us, ask us, so that we can assist you. Your offices are very far, very, very far. If you can check somewhere in the organogram where we connected ourselves, that I can give you statistics in terms of the offices, how many cases per each province, unlike, you know, which you have managed to solve. You see, this one, from cases which were referred to you, Eastern Cape is 734, but look the population of Eastern Cape. Is it true? And it's where the people are experiencing, people where are worst exploited. You go to Free State, it's 510. But you go to Western Cape, it's 1,711. KZN, a little bit better, 2,380. You go to Northern Cape, which is two. Yes, ma'am, I'm finishing. Am I out of order?
I'm not out of order. I'm just looking at the time.
Okay, let me suspend myself.
Thanks, Chairperson. Two of my questions are covered by Honorable Band. One, page 22 on your annual report, because I had to look at the annual report because I couldn't grasp this night. On your accessibility of services to Yuba, the North Chairperson and the eastern part of the Eastern Cape are literally not there. To somebody who knows me, you can. Eastern Cape is not East London and Port Elizabeth. This is a disgrace. You can't come and tell us. And it's affecting our people. People having to drive all the way from Matatia for a case in East London. They drive more than 500 kilometers and they have to sleep over. It links with your part-time commissioner, who you would be told that they are still on the way. So people have to wait. The other one is on page 65.15. I don't want to reiterate that one. So on supply chain management process, how is the seniority of officials spread over the three SCM committees? One would like to know. There's a tendency of one committee being undermined and the other being upheld as the committee, particularly the last one. Looking at the vision and mission of the CMA, which I like very much, but also not negating the work done by the dispute management and prevention DCM. MP, particularly your work in the rural area. I've read your page 49, the annual report. But then, what is your general assessment of your labor relations, generally, in the South African context, taking from the fact that, Chairperson, we are now 15 years with the CCMA? We know where we were in terms of labor relations in the post-South Africa, which was what it was. Now, in your 15 years, what can you say in terms of the broad labor relations? I've picked up the various issues. This Chairperson, is a broad question which needs maybe the director to dig deeper into saying, are we getting there or not? Lastly, Chuck, I don't have many questions to liberate, but I have got to keep one. I've looked and listened at the slides, and when the CCMA was talking jobs, saving jobs against retrenchment, and I looked and listened, you know, carefully on your terminology. Assisting would be your term, would be the terms used, engaging, exploring, and all. I didn't see or get a sense where there is some kind of emphasis and CCMA being emphatic. I'm raising this question, Chair, at a risk that sitting here, I do not have the copy of the Labour Relations Act, particularly sections 189 and 189A mentioned. So I may also be at risk of asking something which those two sections are responding directly to. Because what my interest is there a situation where CCMA is able to say no to the employer and yes to the employer? Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Okay, my question is about job creation in the first place and the skills development. I want to know, and that is especially foreigners. We've got a big problem at this stage in South Africa about the foreigners, and as if you are looking at our borders, what is going on there, I'm very, very worried about it. And a lot of these foreigners get jobs in South Africa. And what are you doing to handle the situation when there's illegal people is getting into jobs in South Africa? What is the process you're taking on with such people? And then it's good to train people. And I'm listening to you, but how do you know in what direction you must train people? Is there people who is retrenching, and what measures are you using in South Africa to say, but here we've got a need, and we must train the people in this direction to help them out at the end of the day so that they can get a new job or another job? How are you doing that? I think that is a bit, as you mentioned about the FIFA, and that is very easy. There's a couple of specific jobs you train people in, but now FIFA is gone. And what happened to that people now at this stage? Are they still in jobs, or are they also jobless at this stage? When a company is in trouble, we read in the newspapers and we listen on the radio that you make a big input there, and I think the people appreciate it very much what you're doing for them. But how are you going to assist a company if it's going bad in that company? How are you going to help them to keep the people in job? Because if it's going bad, the first thing is they are going to retrench the people or the employees. And how are you manage it? How are you help these companies if there's really trouble? And then my last question is, I want to know if we are looking into the accessibility of offices right over the country. It is worrying me a bit, because the province where I'm coming from, the Northwest province, is only a few offices, and that is very rural areas in that province. And if you're looking into the Western Cape, there's a lot of offices and hearing rooms and satellite offices. So What is wrong that the Western Cape have such a lot and the rest of the South Africa got lost the less offices at all, and especially the Northwest province? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, the first question is about the workload. If you see the difference of the workload since 1996 and 2011, it's almost double. Does the department has a case flow management system which deals above those cases which is in your schedule, like conciliation 30 days and arbitration 90 days, which take more than that? How then does you deal with backlog in terms of the unfinished cases? Chairperson, the other one is that I heard the department, the institution says that they work very close with the Department of Labor. The Department of Labor was here 2 to 3 weeks ago. They also told us they are constrained in terms of access, in terms of their own office. They don't cover all the rural areas. Now here, CCMA comes and says that they will, by April, most of the individuals don't need to go to the offices. They can just go in the Department of Labor's office and then they'll be able to see the progress of the case. But hence, the department also has their own constraints in terms of rendering services to the rural areas. It seems to me they have the same problem here as the department. I don't want to deal with the issue of access because I think it's raised. If you take in the Western Cape, the nearest point where the CCMA render its services is Lutzel, and it's almost 150 cases from Bitterfontein. So there is also an issue of access in the Western Cape. Although I agree it's very skewed in terms of the service points in the country, nationally. Chairperson, the perception outside there is that the CCMA don't have enough teeth with relation to legislation. I'm saying the perception in society is that a verdict can be get, there can be a verdict from a commissioner, but the implementation of that verdict by the employees, it's the discretion of the employee going to be when that decision is going to be implemented or not at all. Even a government is also one of the culprits, which don't bound itself in many occasions with the verdict given by the commissioner in terms of in favor of the employees. So I'm saying there's a huge wrong perception the outside. It might be right. Jefferson, the other issue is in terms of how the new guidelines which are going to be implemented in Jan 2012 is going to assist the commissioner or the work of the commission in terms of bringing down the huge number of the backlog. I think it attempts to address that if I look in terms of the presentation here, Chairperson. Yeah, no, I think I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and again, over to you, but in your responses, maybe if you can clarify to us that how often do you use community radio stations, and also the DVD that you have in four languages, which languages are there? And also, when do you intend, you know, using all the languages on the DVD? And what is the criteria that you used? to choose those languages that you have chosen. Over to you. Members, if time allows us, we will come back with more questions. Thanks. Over to you, Nevin and your team.
Thank you, Chen. Thank you for the interesting questions. I'm going to try, because I know there's also a time constraint. I'll try and answer some myself directly, and then if it's in order with the chair, I'll ask some of the members of the management team to assist me, because they might give a quicker answer than me in relation to that. I'm going to begin with the question from the Honourable Sander in relation to that. Firstly, I apologize that there were not numbers on the slides. We will definitely not let that happen again. It is unusual. I only noticed it when you raised it with me. So please accept our apologies. So you would agree that we got the invitation to come last Thursday, and we did try our very best to give you as full a presentation as possible. And
we understand, Nareen, but getting the invitation on Thursday doesn't mean that the numbers can't be on the pages. Really, your apology is accepted. You are correct to raise an apology, but it doesn't mean to say when you got the invitation on Thursday, then you can number pages. Thanks.
Chair, your point is taken. I think the concern raised in relation to accessibility, can I try and address all the questions together? I think I want to start with that I don't actually disagree with any of the comments that have been made by the committee. We actually agree with the issue of accessibility. But we also have to bid to the National Treasury for resources. And we're also constrained by those resources. And it's absolutely no excuse. But if you look 5 years ago, what our accessibility footprint was and what it is now, we've actually been on a major accessibility drive, and we've significantly improved it. Is there room for improvement? I absolutely agree. And should we work harder on it, I'm sure that all the management team here will support me and agree in relation to that. We are trying to do it in two different ways. That's partly why we're elaborating on the U-signal of the Department of Labour offices, and we're also trying to lobby constantly to National Treasury to give us additional resources. But it obviously is important, and we agree that we need to have accessibility. The challenge for us, and I need to flag this to you, is that we think people have to have their rights, and they have the right to bring their cases, and I think the members have clearly and starkly pointed that out, that the more offices we open and the more accessibility we have, the more cases we have, then we need to ask Treasury for more money. And we get into a cycle with Treasury. So I would maybe ask the committee to support me in relation to that issue. But we completely
raised that when the committee said, what assistance is
Well, I thought that would make you. I was really being respectful and trying not to be cheeky, but we would really appreciate some comments in relation to that. And I think the points that have been raised around Mpumalanga, Limpopo, we completely agree. And in relation to the Eastern Cape is a huge challenge, as is Northern Cape, and the vast areas that are covered there. And we are trying to work on clever and constructive processes. Now, obviously, it's easy in the urban areas and to try and use fancy technology if you've got a society that has access to all that technology, but we don't actually have a society like that, so we have to try and come with innovation in relation to that. So I don't want to argue with the committee members. I'm in agreement with them. We're going to work harder on it. You've made us sit up because we've been quite proud of how we've been rolling out accessibility, but we've heard the point and we'll work harder on it going forward. I think that's what I need to say in relation to that, and we will work in relation to that. I'm going to answer on behalf of Commissioner Daphne in relation to accessibility and the issue of the streamlining of the training level scheme and just a couple of questions that have come out on that. Please, I think I want to emphasize, we believe the training level scheme is a very constructive and very useful tool. What we're saying is, as a criticism from a CTMA, is that there's so many departments that have got to work on it that it makes it difficult to line the bureaucracy. Do we think it's useful? We think it's fantastic. We think it's a great success, and it's been reported around the world as an achievement in the economic crisis. So we're not saying that we shouldn't have such a scheme. What we're saying is, and again, we need support from committees and from legislature, that we need to streamline operations. We need to get departments working together. I always, and I'm not allowed to as a director say this, but I always quote the following. The ANC always says, working together, we can do more. So I want the departments to work better together to make the scheme work better in relation to that. I'm going to ask
in relation to the issues of community radio stations, and I'm going to ask Mr. Mdaab to give details in relation to that. I feel a bit unfair to him now because I made him skip over all that because I was trying to speed up. There is a lot of work done in relation to community radio stations, but we can always, as you know, do more. And the CCMA's process has been to obviously operate in the official languages as much as possible. But when we get to that other question, I'll ask him to deal with that in relation to that. Then there was another question, and I'm going to ask, I didn't explain properly, we have the former CFO and the new CFO here together because they're busy in a handover process. So I'm going to ask if all questions raised on page 65 of the annual report for the former CFO to answer because it's very unfair. The new CFO has been in her office for, 7 days. So I don't want you to have to ask a question to the committee if you would accept that. And that's why I asked the former CFO, who's very kindly has agreed to hand over the process, to answer that question. So, Sekhlolo, could I ask you to assist me? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question raised by Honourable Sibanda and also Honourable Mlenzana, I hope I pronounced correctly, on page 65 and point 50 around leadership in the organisation. Where we are coming from as we put the context in the 2009 and 10 audit report, we had irregular expenditure to the value of about 58 million rand. And we had a process with the Auditor General and National Treasury to streamline our processes and also to address issues of the supply chain management policy. And in this audit, we had, I think, about 200% improvement in that there was no material irregular expenditure reported on, where it was only minor deviations, which we have recorded, not found by the Auditor General, where we showed a marked improvement. However, we still were required that we need to exercise leadership in the processes of supply chain. Hence, new committees were established on specification, evaluation, and adjudication. And also, I think with this, I'll also ask the question of Honorable Mlenzana, that those committees, where before you had not senior people heading those committees and deliberating in those committees, that's where we found faults in our approval processes. In the rejigged and improved committees, the specification committee, that's where we put the head of legal of the organization, a senior person who understands the law, to can head that committee, which is the first committee we start with. And also, in the evaluation committee, a senior manager was put in place of that to head that. And in the adjudication committee, a national senior commissioner was put as a chairman to head that. And all those committees, to make sure that we have added governance and oversight, the office of the director and the office of the CFO were not sitting members in those committees. They played secretarial role from the office of the CFO, but other members who are not daily involved with the issues of procurement and approval were exercising the duties of approvers in those committees. I hope I've been able to answer, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Floro. In the issue in relation to skills development, I mean, firstly, the CCMA itself is not involved in the delivery of skills development mandates in relation to CETAs, and you all know that falls under higher education and training. Having said that, we're very, very proud of our training program. And we have a very, very elaborate training program for commissioners, and I would argue very strongly, and we've done a tracking of all the commissioners that we've trained and all the staff that we've trained over the last 15 years, and many of them have gone on to very good jobs, very great things, and done very interesting pieces of work. So that's the key issue in relation to that. We have a bursary scheme, we have a training scheme, and we have a process where we ensure that all staff, no matter whether they're involved directly in labor relations or they're involved in finance, have access to further training, further education in relation to that. And also, obviously, the work that we do in the dispute management section has a whole role of training parties on how to use the CTMA, how to improve their skills in relation to that. And we do a lot of work of training in relation to that. So I would argue that the CTMA does do some contribution to skills development, but obviously that is as an employer in relation to that.
I think I'm going to move on now to Mzani's questions. And okay, Mlengvani, I apologize. Okay, I did actually write it down correctly. I thought I'd got it wrong. So I apologize. Okay. I've answered, and I'm just going to repeat again the question around Eastern Cape accessibility. We're also concerned about that, and I think if you looked also on Norman and Dane, that you will see that we are not so happy with the performance of the Eastern Cape province. So we're working quite hard on that, and we've got it in the focal area of our board and of me. And any assistance or ideas you have, we would appreciate hearing some comments on that. It is a challenge in relation to that. You asked me a very direct question, which I deliberately ducked in the challenges that the CCMA faces around, do I think we're getting there in relation to labour relations? I think the answer to that question is that we were getting there and we've been doing very well. And the CCMA has definitely made an impact in its last 15 years on the landscape of the labour market in South Africa. And certainly many workers more than used to know that they have the right to come and complain and to deal with cases in relation to that. I think that we were proud we were able to say up to our 10th, 12th anniversary that we were also bringing industrial peace. I am concerned in my capacity as a director at the moment that, as I mentioned, we're seeing a rise of violence and strikes, and we're seeing more and more use of protests in the streets in relation to necessarily not only workplace-related issues, but the CCMA is being held accountable for those things that it's not in our mandate to address. So do I think we're achieving good work? I think we are. Have we got challenges in relation to our collective bargaining processes and what's happening in relation to that? Yes, I do, and I think we need to look at that. And I think it's a reflection of a broader society, and we need to work harder in relation to that. I think also that the growing gap that we see in wage issues, growing demands in relation to executive pay and things that go with that also cause a lot of frustration for people. And you can understand the individual workers in the street and their concerns in relation to that, and I think that that's what's leading to some of the issues that go there. So on a broad level, and I need to convey this, we had our 50th anniversary recently, and I'm sure some of you saw some of the work that we did there. We specifically decided we shouldn't have celebrations because, firstly, we've been into an economic crisis, and I think we're going back into another one. And we marked the occasion by reflecting on what we've achieved. And our board said to us very specifically that they think that we are being overly hard on ourselves, that the CCMA has achieved a lot in its 15 years, and we have achieved a significant amount. But as is the human nature, we always want to achieve more and do better. And I think that we have to be open to that kind of issues and those kind of points that go in relation to that. I think your other question, and thank you for phrasing it in the way that you did, and we're very happy at any point to work with the committee on the more detail of the law. And that is in relation to, that can the CCMA at any point in a retrenchment process say no? And the answer to that question is, and I think it also answers a question that Honourable De Vera asked a little bit later, can we say no? And the answer is no, we can't. We are merely a facilitatory body, and we can try and assist, and we can try and link people, and we try and do all this work. That's why we use all that language of assisting, emerging, exploring, because we don't have the rights in relation to that, in relation to the law. And that obviously is an area that needs to be considered. And again, I would appeal to the chair that the committee could use its considerable influence in the negotiations that are going on at the moment in relation to that. I think that I've then covered the Honourable Mzani's questions. And Honourable Groenewald, firstly, the question in relation to foreigners, a very controversial question, I'm very aware, and the CCMA gets challenged by that on a daily basis. We are, firstly, and this will answer another question that I think that Honourable De Beer asked. The CCMA can make decisions in relation to law, and then those decisions have to be implemented by our oversight body, which is the Labour Court. Now, that falls under a different department, and it operates in a different way, but it's a court, and we have to abide by the decisions of the Labour Court. As it stands at the moment, the Constitution of South Africa says that everyone is entitled to fair labour practices, and that's Section 23. And what that means is that if you are an illegal immigrant and have a case, you can bring it to the CCMA, and the CCMA can't kick you out, although they can't really necessarily award you any a reinstatement or something, and also obviously there would be an obligation to report it in relation to the process. But there's a principle in law that says that if the employer knows that you're illegal and the individual knows that they're illegal, then you still have rights in relation to that. So the CCMA gets challenged by that on a daily basis. But as the law stands, to a certain degree, if there is an illegality in the relationship, you can still bring your case to the CCMA, which obviously expands and adds to our case load. I think I've dealt with the training issue and explained how we go about it. The CCMA itself, in relation to training layoff, and again I emphasize, is not the training deliverer. They are only in a position to give guidance and refer the relevant people who want the training layoff scheme to the training sectors, and the training sectors and the company will, with the workers, decide what the issues are in relation to that and how they address that. So while we guide them in a direction, we're not in a position to actually tell them how to be trained and what to be trained on. The CCMA's role we try to elaborate in relation to when a company is in trouble, and that is that we have tried very hard to link with the Industrial Development Corporation, with National Productivity SA, and various other sister organizations, brother organizations in government, to try to assist employers to maybe relook at their businesses and relook at issues, because yes, we absolutely agree with the statement that often when a company is in trouble, the first thing that employers do is go to retrench workers. That's why we think that and why I emphasized earlier, the difference between a small business, when they are retrenching, they don't have to come to the CCMA first, whereas in a big business over 50 is retrenching, has to come to the CCMA. So it's very hard for us to step in when the retrenchment process has already actually happened and the dismissal has been effective. It's almost impossible to save jobs in that situation. I personally believe it's an area that very strongly needs to be really looked at, because obviously we actually have a country of quite small businesses and it would assist in relation to that. Again, on Mukhunavot, you raised the accessibility issue. I hope I've covered it in my initial question in relation to that. Then moving on in relation to the questions from Honourable De Beer. I'm going to ask Mr. Governor to help me to some degree in relation to the workload question and how we are dealing with it. And let me start by saying that we put up our performance targets and how we operate, and that the law says we have to do this in 30 days and we have to schedule arbitrations in 90 days. And what that means is that we have to do that. And what we've done is we've had to work our staff harder and make our resources go further, because we don't want to not comply with those targets in relation to that. Mr. Governor.
Thanks, Terry. Honourable Dipia, I think the first thing is, you know, when you talk about 1998 and 2011 and the growth of the caseload, the CCMA has absolutely no control over that. It's determined by so many factors, you know, including the economy of the country, and strangely enough, every time the director appears on TV, on radio, our caseload increases the next day. And the same also holds true when Hilton, Hadao, and his team are doing their dispute prevention work and management work. Our caseload increases simply because people are hearing these things. People watch the media, and they all think they have a case, and perhaps they do. So that's one of the things that increases our caseload all the time and beyond our control. We cannot turn away people. If they feel that they have a case, yep, this is the place that they need to come to. Secondly, I just want to add to what the director said about the statutory requirements in terms of, you asked the question in terms of the 30 days and 90 days and a backlog. You know, let me take you back about 6-7 years ago when we started measuring stuff. Yes, we did have a backlog. We put it into processes and we dealt with them. The organization in the last 5 years especially has become a very performance-driven, a very performance-driven organization. And at the moment, if you look at it, I can put it up again if you'd like, from 2007 to 2011, of how we've actually tracked making sure that we complete the conciliation completely within a 30-day period, and it's roughly at about 26 days these days. And from an arbitration point of view, we are well within the 90-day period. I also mentioned when I was doing the presentation that all these type of targets and efficiencies and benchmarks are linked to the individual regional manager and the individual commissioner, and it's monitored all the time on a monthly basis. All our cases are managed electronically, so it's very easy for us to actually pick up the exceptions and see where the problems are. Ronald Bernico and myself, that's our job, to actually look at where to manage the workload of the organization, to see what resources are there. Are there stumbling blocks? Are there caseloads increasing? Are there backloads creeping up? That's what we have to do on a daily basis to make sure we deliver on that. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I'll go back to the next question would be ahead, but I've kind of answered, but I want to emphasize it because you asked a question that's close to my heart, so I want to emphasize it again. And that was the issue around what is the teeth of the CCMA. Now, we do have, and it's important to note this, that as it stands at the moment, in the course of last year, the CCMA issued 75,000 arbitration awards. Only 7% of those went on review to the Labour Court. So the interpretation that one must take from that there is this high level of compliance. Having said that, there are also settlement agreements that are not complied with once they've been mediated in relation to that, and those also have to be made orders of court. Now, the process and the problem that the CCMA has is that they have no control over that process. It's an area that is problematic for us. Once the CCMA has certified that it's an arbitration award is an order of court, or they have certified a settlement agreement is an order of court, a worker or an individual employee or a trade union with their worker as their member are required to go to the Labour Court and to get that made into a writ of execution and engage with the Sheriff of the Court. Sheriff of the Court is a totally separate entity to the CCMA, and the CCMA has no control over that. So while we can come here and tell you that we're being efficient, we're hearing our cases in under 60 days, we're giving our arbitration awards out in 14 days, and yes, a significant portion of the population of employers are complying. There's a batch of them who are not complying, and that you have to make that order an order of the Labour Court. But once it's out of the CCMA's area, and it's not even within the department into which we report, it is quite problematic for us to actually be able to assist employees to enforce the awards that go on that. So it's actually an area of concern. And I mean, so I agree with the Honourable Member that the perception issue there in some areas is correct. It is not as bad as people feel it is, but it's also not in the CCMA's control. And it's an area that we think should be looked at, as I understand it is being looked at in the negotiations that are going on at NEDLAC at the moment. The next question related specifically to the CCMA arbitration guidelines. And yes, the idea on that is that it would streamline processes and give greater clarity to people coming to the CCMA and presenting their cases and making sure the commissioners are conducting their processes in a calm and ethical manner, and that they conduct them in the same basis of each time, so it leaves less leeway for people to challenge the process in relation to it. So obviously we're very hopeful that there'll be a positive process in relation to that. I'm going to ask Ms. Mdow, together with Commissioner Daphne, to address the questions on the community radio stations and the DVD languages and when we're putting the DVD into all the languages. I know there's a process, but I don't know the details, so I'm just going to need to refer to them to ask me.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to the question on radio talk show that was raised by the Honourable Mr. Sibande, he gave an example of the Northern Cape, and he mentioned the Ku and the Kwe languages. And the Northern Cape is one of our very challenging regions in terms of radio talk shows, in that they can't get access to free radio talk shows. And I would also want to link that with your question, Madam Chair, where you asked us as to how often do we use community radio stations. We rely solely on community radio stations because we don't really have the budget to pay for airtime. And what is the challenge is, usually after we have worked with community radio stations, as soon as they get that listenership that they want, they would always want to make it difficult for us to keep that slot. So it's one of the challenges that I think we need to request the committee to come to our assistance if possible. The question that you raised, Madam Chair, regarding the languages, the four languages that we have in our DVDs and ECR would be English, Afrikaans, isiZulu, and isiSotho. In terms of how those four languages were chosen, I would request Commissioner Daphne, because he was part of the project team that worked on that.
Well, very briefly, the DVD started as a video about 7 years ago now, and the objective was that it be a project. It was initially funded externally, and the objective was to make that video available in all our languages. Its objective also was to do a sequel. The video takes people up to the beginning of the hearing, and then the second video or DVD was going to go further. The funders stopped funding us, and it's more a capacity challenge than anything else. We hope to continue with this project.
Thank you. Chair, as I've written down, I think that I've answered the questions that have been answered by the members. And thank you for the engaging questions, and obviously if any more, you're welcome to answer them.
Members, you still want the last bite? Honorable Subande, the last question that you wanted to ask, did you ask it, or do you want to ask it now?
No.
Honorable Lenzana?
Chair, on a lighter note, the CCMA does not have to run away from why decide on specifically four languages. It was asked, and the question is simple. If you are asked next time, that's politically correct. Because you have got Nguni languages clumped together. We have got the Sesotho languages also clumped together. We have got English, we have got Afrikaans, which is politically correct, particularly if there are funding challenges. Thanks, Chair. So I don't want you to go thinking here that you had a problem with responding to that question.
Very much. CCMA should thank you. let me at this point in time thank CCMA and say it's the first time, and we are still going to call you again next year with the board. Actually, you must tell them that we are still going to need to meet with them. And also, let me once again apologize for the inconvenience done earlier. I will have to walk you out, as you remember that I made commitment that I'll walk you out. I'll be responsible for you. But let me really thank you for the presentation and the meeting stand adjourned. Honorable members, can you just remain that we adopt the minutes of the 16th?